Hello, everyone. Welcome back to I See What You're Saying, the Disciplined Listening Podcast. I'm Michael Reddington, and today it is my pleasure to introduce our next guest, Pedro Bisalha. He is a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt and owner of Horizonte BJJ in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. And he comes to us today all the way from Rio to talk about key lessons from his work in his book, which is titled Neither Head Down Nor Nose Up. And with his book, he writes and talks a lot about the lessons we all learn through Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and how we can use that to be a good citizen and help others. How do we find balance in our lives? And how do we neither become an aggressor or a victim? And that really is his passion. As Pedro works often on his own time and his own dime outside of his jiu-jitsu academy to facilitate anti-bullying programs in schools. And not only does he work to help coach and protect and guide victims of bullying, but he also works to connect with bullies as well. Because bullies have unmet needs, and when they feel seen and when they feel recognized, their behavior can change and they can become a leader in their community or in their school as well. So he really tries to address the program from both ends. How do we give people who have been bullied the support and the confidence and the guidance that they need, but also how do we help the bullies as well so we can impact the bullying epidemic, if you will, from both sides? He has a very interesting story that involves both music and jiu-jitsu. He has a wonderful perspective, and I'm so happy that he took the time not only to share the lessons that he has learned through Brazilian jiu-jitsu, but also the lessons that he has learned with so many children that he has worked with over so many years in Rio de Janeiro. So I'm really, really excited to share this conversation with everyone. Thank you all for taking the time to join us today. And of course, before we get into the conversation, we need to take a minute to thank our sponsors. First, we have HumanTel. For everyone who has thought about what it would mean to them if they were able to capture what someone was likely thinking and feeling in real time by accurately evaluating shifting emotions through changes in facial expressions and nonverbal communication, I highly recommend heading over to humantel.com and checking out all of their best-in-class online training for how to accurately evaluate facial expressions and nonverbal communications for emotional connotations and changes. I've done all of it myself. I highly recommend it. And while you're there, please enter the code INCLUSIVE25 for 25% off all of their best-in-class online training. We also have the International Association of Interviewers. When you have the time for the professional interviewers who are listening, please head over to certifiedinterviewer.com to check out all of their resources that they have available, from their online networking, connecting resources, and education to their in-person events that they have nationwide. That is where you can also learn about the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation, what it takes to qualify if you do, how to earn the designation, of course, how to maintain it and continue to grow and give back to the community of interview and interrogation. All of that and more at certifiedinterviewer.com. And Inquasive. Inquasive.com is where you can go to learn more about the customized educational engagements our clients ask us to facilitate for their leadership teams, their sales teams, their HR teams, and beyond, to teach them how to obtain the everyday confessions from people when success in any moment, any job, any initiative relies on helping people save face and share critical information at critical times. All of that and more can be found at Inquasive.com. Thank you all again for continuing to join us and learn from these conversations as much as we do having these conversations. We appreciate you being here. And without further ado, Pedro Bisalha. Hello, Pedro. It is so great to see you. How are you, sir?
Hi, Michael. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm well, thanks. I'm here in Brazil. It's a pleasure to talk to you today.
Well, thank you so much for joining from Brazil. Right now, it's winter here in the United States, and it's cold even where I live in North Carolina. So I'm envisioning that it is sunny and warm and a much better place in Brazil right now.
Well, it's not sunny, but it's for sure very hot here. It's like 42 degrees Celsius. I'm in the air conditioning right now. If it was not, I would be sweating. Okay, so it's a very different condition, but I'm okay here.
I'm glad you're warm. We were talking before we hit record, and I'm so excited to talk to you about so many things. because we share passions. And admittedly, you're much more advanced in these passions than I am. You have your own jiu-jitsu academy there in Brazil, and you do a lot of work with anti-bullying and supporting children and family and schools beyond the work that you do supporting people through your jiu-jitsu academy. So to get started, I think the first question I would love to ask you is, even just taking it off the mat, how has jiu-jitsu impacted your life off the mat?
Well, my story is, my parents, especially my father, they never had the time to play with me, like playing soccer, which is very popular in Brazil, or to introduce me to any kind of activity like fighting, you know, martial arts. My parents are all doctors, both are doctors, medical doctors, and they worked a lot. They worked a lot, like from the early morning to the night. They got home really late, and they raised me, never telling me what to do, which was great. They never pushed me to something that they wanted me to do. Like they let me choose what I would do in my life. But there is the other side of this, which is I never had, especially with my father, an example to follow. Like many of my friends, they had parents that were in jiu-jitsu before they were born. So it was natural for them to engage in jiu-jitsu because the father was there, the father was a black belt. It didn't happen with me. My father gave me different good examples in life, but not in sports. So how jiu-jitsu got into my life? I had a friend. I was interested in jiu-jitsu since the UFC won, which Royce Gracie won and shook everybody. Everybody was shocked with that, including me, including Brazilians, because at that time, jiu-jitsu was already popular in Brazil, but not like soccer. Not everyone knew jiu-jitsu. We heard about it. We heard about the so-called pit boys that used to beat everyone in the nightclubs. And I knew that there was jiu-jitsu, but I didn't know exactly what it was. So there was a friend of mine, and he was starting at Carson Gracie Academy in Copacabana. And so he invited me, and I was there. I fell in love completely at the first time. And it's difficult to understand because it was very, very interesting environment. It didn't smell well. There was a bad smell. It was hot, full of men fighting one to each other. But I knew that that thing was important to me because I never had a father that was how can I say the example is like the male example of a fighter or hunter, also this kind of male example. My father is great. I'm not saying the opposite. My father is great. He's a very good example for me, but I needed something else. So when I met jiu-jitsu, it fulfilled a blank in my life. There was this. I think that after learning jiu-jitsu, I completed my malehood. Is there such a word? I don't know.
Yes, that works.
There was something missing, which was learning how to defend yourself against other men. If someone wanted to beat me before jiu-jitsu, I wouldn't know what to do or how to behave. After jiu-jitsu, I am a much more confident man. And I think this is important for every man, and women, of course. You must know how to defend yourself. So it changed my life. Not only in practical ways, but in my mind and deep in my heart. Because once you know, once you're confident enough to say, nobody will beat me, it changes. It changes the way you behave. It changes your mind. That was happened to me.
Which is a story that I've never heard that way, certainly in your case, but certainly a similar thread. And I think that's a great way to start segueing into your passion for anti-bullying. Because please correct me, and I've I've trained jiu-jitsu at this point for 6 years consistently. I trained a little bit previous to that as well. My general understanding that although jiu-jitsu has evolved so much over so many years, that in many ways, the Brazilian jiu-jitsu that we know was crafted as a way for smaller opponents to survive and be successful against larger, stronger opponents. So if we have somebody who is being victimized, being a bully, doesn't have confidence or athleticism, or hasn't been put in that position, although jiu-jitsu is a long journey and humbling and difficult to learn, to go through that can create not only the capability, but the confidence to take on the world and see yourself in the mirror in a very different way. So yeah. How has your jiu-jitsu experience transitioned into your efforts, or maybe inspired your efforts into your commitment to anti-bullying?
Well, I was bullied when I was young, when I was 12 or 13 years old. There was a kid at my street. He lived like in front of my house, two brothers. One of them was a really good friend, but the other one was a bully to me. But it was not a boy-to-boy bully. He had all these friends, and they every time I was coming back home from school, they were surrounding me at the street and threatening me, like, we're going to beat you if you leave your house. If you step on the street, we're going to beat you. And this was very disturbing for me. But I kept it cool. I was calm. And there was one day that I decided to engage in a fight with this kid. I said, okay, let's do it. I was brave enough at the time. It took some years for me. And we fought. It was like two kids fighting. No punches landed, right? Just hands all over the place. And after that, the kids started respecting me more. So that was my experience with bullying. And after, it was a long time before I knew jiu-jitsu. I was like 12. I started training jiu-jitsu when I was 31. So after I knew jiu-jitsu, I realized that if I knew that at the time, the boy would never bully me. So it was clear to me that it's a very important tool for kids. And I'm a teacher for more than 20 years. I used to teach music, and I still teach music. And I have contact with a lot of kids. I know lots of kids. And dealing with their issues, even in the music class, you get to know them better, and they talk about that. They talk about how they're going to school. They talk about the kids that are bullying them. Sometimes they don't have problems with that, and it's okay. And when you get to know those experiences and those stories, you sympathize with them. You feel like, I know a tool that could be good for this boy, and I can help this boy. So I started my jiu-jitsu school, and I had lots of kids, and I always taught them to defend themselves, and I always taught them to believe in the technique, because, you know, jiu-jitsu is the most efficient martial art there is. It was proven in the first UFC with Royce, and there's nothing else to say after that. So it's very efficient. And when the kid feels that power, they lose the fear of getting beaten. And if they lose that fear, they will never allow a bully to steal the snack, to steal their lunch in school. You know, that's what kids do in school. They steal their food, they steal their money, sometimes they beat you. And if you're not afraid to get beaten, you never let somebody do that to you. You never let people like call you names, you know? So when I realized it was a very important and very effective tool, I decided to focus on anti-bullying programs and use jiu-jitsu as the main tool. That was how it happened to me.
I love the music teacher part as well. I truly believe that teaching is teaching. And if you're a music teacher, then you're a better jiu-jitsu professor, because it's that, how do we teach and how do we build skills and how do we resonate and develop confidence and connect with different people, so that those hearing those two skills together. And honestly, I can't play music, but I would imagine that learning how to play music is very similar to learning jiu-jitsu, and that you're putting the pieces together and you're finding rhythm, and you have to keep your rhythm with somebody else, and music at somebody in your band, and jiu-jitsu with your opponent, but that rhythm is feeding off of each other. I bet there are some very interesting similarities between teaching and learning music and teaching and learning jiu-jitsu. And I also bet that both can impact somebody's confidence and initiative to continue learning.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. As you said, teaching is teaching. Teaching is not about only knowing the subject. It's about having a method. If you know how to teach, if there is a new subject, you get to learn that subject, and then you are able to teach others. I deal with music for such a long time, much more than jiu-jitsu. I'm 12 years in jiu-jitsu and 25 years in music. So I was first a music teacher. And, you know, the method, as you said, put the pieces together. What I like to do with students is break something in lots of pieces that you can learn easily, and then you put them together. Like if there is a student of mine that is having trouble switching from one chord to the other in the guitar, I go finger by finger, like, first move this finger here and go back, forth and back, like, and then when he gets that, I go for the next part. And in jiu-jitsu is the same. If the kid has a problem learning a position, a sweep or something, I break in parts and it becomes much easier to understand, much easier to learn. And yeah, teaching is a method. Whatever subject you're teaching, you gotta have a method, right? Yeah.
I agree completely. And I also love, again, try not to just let the jiu-jitsu conversation dominate, because I could very easily do that. Let's have that conversation another time. But in particular, my son trains, and my wife has begun training jiu-jitsu as well. So it's something that we get to share as a family. And for my son, as we're talking about bullying for a moment, on top of being able to defend himself and being confident in that situation, I'm also extremely hopeful and expectant that the confidence and the respect that he learns through jiu-jitsu will make him far less likely to participate in any type of bullying behavior. And also, the confidence that he gains from jiu-jitsu will make it easier for him to walk away from unnecessary confrontation. And for me, when I think back to my childhood, I didn't discover jiu-jitsu until my early 20s, and I did it briefly and then came back in my early 30s as well. I'm sorry, came back in my late 30s. But I think of all the situations I got into when I was a kid that I would never walk away from. And in a moment of honesty, I walked away because I was too insecure to walk away. And I really hope that the jiu-jitsu my son is learning not only helps him learn to defend himself, but makes him a better human being towards others and gives him the confidence to walk away. Through the work that you're doing, do you see those benefits with the children that you teach and you support?
Yeah, I do see. I do see. I think it was Elio Gracie that said once to somebody, I don't remember the names, but he said something like this. Would you beat a five-year-old child? And the guy answered, no, of course not. It's a child. And then Elio said, yeah, you know jiu-jitsu. You got to look to those people that don't know jiu-jitsu as five-year-old children. So walk away. Walk away from the fight because you know what you're capable of doing. So, yeah, I agree that once you know jiu-jitsu, once you're confident enough in your capabilities of beating someone, you don't need anymore to do that. You know, you only engage in a fight if you want to prove something, or if there's no other way. If you're like in a dead end, you have to defend yourself, you engage in a fight. But if there's a way out, if you don't need to fight, if you're confident enough in your abilities, you don't need to do that. You know, the bully is that person that needs to prove something, to believe in himself. Once you know it, once you know that against somebody that doesn't know anything about jiu-jitsu, you're like, you're going to dominate. You're going to do whatever you want with the person. It doesn't matter the size. It can be the national boxing champion. You're going to beat the guy, right? Once you know that, you don't have to prove anything else. So you get, it's like you're in peace with yourself. Once you're in peace with yourself, you don't have anything to prove. There's no point in fighting. There's no point of on arguing, you know? I believe in that.
I can't agree strongly enough in that point you made about having peace with yourself. We have found it through a common martial art. People might find it in different ways. They might find it through music. They might find it through yoga. They might find it through any number of surfing, through any number of other opportunities. But once you find that inner peace, you look at the world differently, you react to situations differently, you keep your calm easier, you problem solve faster. It's so important. And you did mention, which I find very interesting, that bullies have needs too. That it's very easy to look at a bully and say, that's a bad person, that's an insecure person, that's a trouble person, avoid them, punish them, stay away from them. Uh-huh. But I believe in some of the work that you do, you also focus on meeting some of the needs that bullies have in order to help them move through that process, become better human beings as well. What are some of those needs that you help bullies address?
Well, as you said, society look at bullies as bad person, but they're missing something. Bullies are also victims, sometimes real victims from them, their parents, sometimes they're beating at home, but sometimes they are victim to their own minds. What I want to say, what I mean by that is that every human being has a strong desire to be seen and to be loved. We all have that. Some people have it more, some people have it like less. But every human being wants to be seen and wants to be loved. So what the bully does is he's finding a way to have this necessity, can I say fulfilled? Is that mm-hmm. right? I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah. They like finding a way to do that. I always say that the human desire is like a river. You can never stop the river, but you can channel the river to the direction you want to. So what I do with the kids is when I notice some kid is like a bully-like kid, even if they didn't do anything, and you notice that the kid is like maybe the one that talks louder in the class, the one that is always pushing people, he wants to be seen. What I do is I feed them with what they want, and I redirect their wishes to where I want. So, an example, if there's a kid that is really strong and is like pushing everyone, I say to him, listen, we might say, John, listen, John, you are the strongest kid in the class. So I need you to help me teach the others and protect the little ones. So what I do with this kid is I give him a title. I say he is the best in something. He becomes really happy with that. Now he has a title to show off, to show people. And after that, immediately after the title, I give him a responsibility. Is that right? Yeah.
Yes.
I give him a responsibility. So it becomes clear that if he doesn't match the responsibility, he will lose the title. And he doesn't want to lose the title. He just wants something good to show the other people. So, right? He doesn't have to look for it doing bad things. He doesn't need to steal it from the world. He just receive it from me. So what happens is that those kids, I will tell you a story. In the public school, I started the anti-bully program. There was a kid, Wendell, his name. And he was a very, very aggressive kid. While the kids are playing soccer, he was always playing hard and beating kids and kicking legs and talking loud. He never liked to lose the game. He was always trying to win the game by screaming. And that was a problematic kid. And then when I started the anti-bullying program, there was one of the tools is like we call the alert student. It would be the translation in English. What is the alert student? It's a group of students that I choose, not only the good ones, but also the bad ones, the possible bullies. And I put them together in a room and I have a meeting. And I say to them, kids, I choose you for a special reason. You have many gifts that are very useful for us in our anti-bully program. I want you guys to be my eyes and my ears in the school. I want you guys to be always looking after the others and taking care of the others. And whenever you see something wrong, you come and tell me or tell the principal. And or if you have the opportunity to to separate fights, you do it, okay? Because now you're like my cops. You're like my cops in the school. So this kid, after the meeting, like 10 minutes after the meeting, he was running to me and saying, Pedro, teacher, I already separated two fights in the school. Like the kid was so, he was so proud of himself to receive that title. And they even had a wrist, something, how can I say it?
It's a wristband?
A wristband, yeah. I gave them a wristband to separate them from the others. And the kid was so proud that he started behaving different, like 10 minutes after the meeting. This is not magic. This is only dealing with the mind of a kid, you know, that he wants to be seen. If you don't show them they exist, if you don't tell them that, okay, I see you, I see your value, I see your capabilities, I see you're a good boy. So now, as a good boy, help me do this. They will do. They definitely do. That's the way I work in anti-bullying program with the bullies. With the victims, I teach them how to defend themselves. I teach them that they can touch other people. There's no problem in touching other people. Jiu-jitsu does that for us too. Once you start jiu-jitsu, you're like, can I touch the guy's chest? Can I touch his hand? You know, you think that kind of things. But once you are used to that, you see there's no problem in touching other people. We are doing that. We agree with that. We are in a room that is like for this sport, this kind of sport, this kind of martial arts, and it's okay to touch people. You don't have to be afraid. So it changes a lot. When you're going to like shake hands with the other person, you're going to shake hands confident and looking to the eye because you're not afraid anymore to get in touch with other people. Yeah.
Love both of those. And we mentioned it earlier, but I believe I've seen in most cases, it's easy for teachers, adults, to quickly label bullies as bad and treat them as such. And when you treat them as bad, we just incentivize them to be bad more often. Oh, that's who you see me as? Then that is what I'll be.
Yeah.
But for you to approach it the different way, the concept of giving the bully a title and responsibility, we see you. We see value in you, and this is a way that you can make everybody better because of that presence. And I hope people are picking up on the fact, because we've mentioned fighting a few times, and You can look at jiu-jitsu as a sport. You can look at jiu-jitsu as a martial art. You can look at jiu-jitsu as a tool for fighting. But we've mentioned fighting several times. And as somebody who teaches jiu-jitsu, you're working with bullies not through violence, but through building up their self-esteem and replacing their missing needs in order to help reduce, not only help them be better humans, but also reduce the number of victims. And then on the victim side, yes, we're teaching them how to defend themselves, or you are, excuse me, but it's not just necessarily, here's how to go fight that guy, but it's how to be more confident. It's how to stay calm when your space is being encroached upon, being comfortable touching people, defending yourself. And I think even having spent time on the mat, when you are constantly pressed up against another human being, that just, it teaches you so much about yourself, what you can handle, what you can think your way through, what you can get out of, and how very little things are huge wins. I got my elbow where I needed to be. Oh, now I'm out. I'm not out because it's magic. I'm out because I got my frame in the right place. Like how those little things make such a big difference. So pursuing it, although some people might just assume through violence because it's associated with jiu-jitsu, it's not violence. It's giving people the tools and the respect that they need to be successful in their own skin, their own brains.
Yeah, you know, I like to think about violence as a language. And as I say to my students, I need to know the curse words in English, not to use them, but to know when people are using against me. Same thing about fighting. You got to learn not to use it like against people at your will when you want to. No, it's to learn how to defend yourself. And as you said, those little things, those little moments, you understand the position. Jiu-jitsu is like a training for life. It's a metaphor for life. It's like, and people often ask me, but how is going to jiu-jitsu help me to talk to my boss and ask for a raise in my salary? And I answer them, jiu-jitsu doesn't teach you how to ask for a raise in your salary, but it teaches you how to behave in a stressful situation. You know, it's like a mind train, not a body train. We train our body to fight, to play jiu-jitsu, so to say. But as you play, as you're practicing jiu-jitsu, when somebody mounts you, when somebody's choking you, it's a very stressful situation. It's like a parallel to death, you know, because if they are strangling you and if you're in the streets, there's no tapping. If they strangle you, if you sleep, you're dead. That's the real thing, you're dead. But the academy is a place where you can train that situation many times. If it was in the street, it will only have one chance, one shot. But in academy, in the gym, you train that every day. You can be choked like 20 times a day or more. I don't know. And as you train that more and more, you get more used to being a very stressful situation. And with time and everything that you do a lot, you get intimate with. Yeah. So you're not afraid anymore to stressful situations. Like you can talk to your boss, you can talk to the Pope, you can talk to the president of the United States. I would definitely look to the president of my country or any country in the eye and say, oh, how are you doing? Like a normal person. Or maybe a music idol. I would talk to Paul McCartney like, hi, Paul, how are you doing? Like, not afraid of that situation, you know? It's a normal situation. Being mounted, having somebody at your back trying to choke you is a train to your brain. As you train your brain to be calm in stressful situations, it is the same for every situation in life. Like, you know, as I said, the mindset. This is what I think jiu-jitsu teaches the best. This is the best of jiu-jitsu, I think. And yeah, you can use it any place in your life, anywhere in your life. Doesn't matter.
I agree. And I've experienced to some degree. Just yesterday, I was giving a presentation, and on one of the breaks, the man who was in charge of the group came up to me. Thankfully, he said, good job, we're enjoying it, but told me that somebody in the group wanted to challenge me with questions. And my response was, tell him to
okay.
do it.
Okay.
Like, go ahead. Like, maybe he knows something I don't. I mean, we're going to find out, but go ahead, challenge me with the question. Sure. Because to your point, you know who challenges me? Sean, the person who introduced
me. Oh, really?
He challenges because he will choke me 20 times a day if I'm not paying attention. So that confidence in the ability to stay calm and navigate stress and understand how we're impacting the world around us and how the world around us might impact us is so true, which I believe leads to the book that you wrote. And I'm going to try to translate it correctly. It is neither head up nor nose down. Is that the title of the book?
Neither head down nor nose up.
Okay. I got it wrong again. There you go. Neither head down nor nose up. So yeah. I know that's a translation to English from Portuguese. Could you explain to us what you really mean by the title of your book and how your jiu-jitsu experience really fuels your philosophy?
Yeah, head down. I think in America, it's the same in Brazil. It's a posture that shy people always are into. Like, if you're a shy person, if you're a shy kid in school, you're always with your head down and people say things to you, you don't answer, you don't look at them. That's not a good posture. And nose up is the opposite of it. It's somebody that thinks he's the best. And so he can call people names. He's the popularest too. It's not a good posture either. So my idea with that is like saying to people that don't know jiu-jitsu that this martial art can balance your behavior. You know, if you're very shy, you learn that you learn your value. You learn you understand that you have skills and you can train them. You don't have to be shy. You have value. And if you're a nose up person, you learn how to be humble because you're gonna tap. You're gonna tap, especially in the beginning. You know, now you're a purple belt. You're tapping much less than when you were a white belt or a blue belt. And I'm a black belt, I still tap. I will be tapping until I die. And the thing is, those martial arts, and especially jiu-jitsu, that had the tap moment, and Luta Livre has it too, they're special because there's nobody saying that you lost the fight. There's no referee saying, oh, you lost the fight. You know, it's only you. And when you say to yourself that you lost, you are obligated to be humble because you can't disagree with yourself, right? You can't disagree with yourself. So if you say that you lost, you become more humble. There's no other way, you know? So the title of my book is this. I'm saying to people that jiu-jitsu will make you, at the same moment, a more confident person and a more humble person. It sounds like a paradox, but it's not. It's possible. It's possible for you to become a more confident and more humble person. And, after all those years, I feel like I'm a much better person now. As you said, someone in the audience challenged you. I bet that deep in your heart, you knew that it's okay. If I know the answer, I will answer. If I don't know, I will say simply, well, I don't know. There's no problem in not knowing something. There's no problem in being submitted. You know, everybody gets submitted. There is no such thing that a person that always wins and a person that always loses. There is this thing about American culture that is the win and lose game. We see that in the movies. I don't know if it's the same in real life, but there is always in the movie somebody say to another person, you're a loser, you know? And we tend to think that people are either losers or winners, but we're not. We are the both. In different moments of our life, sometimes we win, sometimes we lose. And there's no problem in losing. This is normal. There's no problem in not knowing the answer to a question from someone in the audience. And Jiu-Jitsu teaches us that too, because we lose every day. We win and lose, we win and lose. And then we ask ourselves, am I a loser or a winner? Neither, and both at the same time. This is beautiful.
It is beautiful. And it's not, yes, it can seem like a paradox, but more confident people usually are more humble because I don't have anything to prove. I don't need to be seen. I don't need that extra attention. So one really does feed the other. From your book, what would you say are the most powerful examples of how we can develop this balance of confidence and humility?
Well, the perfect example for that, well, all the guys that I know that train in jiu-jitsu for a long time, and when I say long time, it doesn't need to be like 20 years. If you train for 3 years, you know good stuff. And all the badasses guys in the gym, those with better jiu-jitsu, those that submit everybody, they are calm guys. They don't threaten people. They are not nose up first people. They like are really calm guys. And you look at them, you can't tell. You can't tell. If you meet the guy in the street, you couldn't tell he's like a black belt, 5 degrees, really good martial artist that will beat you in like 1 minute. So I think the perfect example would be that someone that is calm and that is confident. The real confidence, it's silent. The real confidence is silent. I always say that because if someone is saying to you that he's that, he's this, he does that, he's good at this, you can bet this person's not very confident. If you have to say, if you need to advertise your confidence, it means that it's not very, very, it's not a very, very big confidence, you know? So I will say that silent people and calm people sometimes are the better balanced people, talking about confidence and humility. Yes.
It's certainly what I've seen. And it's funny that that's not always what people would think. Often people are fooled by the one who is the loudest or the one who makes the big show. Mm-hmm. When in reality, it's the person who is not saying anything. And this isn't just for physical confrontation. It can be true in a business meeting. The one who is being a bully by doing all the talking and being the loudest and accusing other people, they're likely the weakest player on the team. And the one who is sitting at the table, taking it all in and not saying anything, could very likely be the strongest person on the team because they're finding solutions and they're seeing the whole situation and they don't feel compelled to have to insert themselves because they know they can handle the situation, whether it's in this meeting or after. They can go solve the problems. It's the same thought process.
Yeah. Do you remember Fedor Emelianenko when he was like facing the other fighter? Mm-hmm. Remember his face was like the face of like a dad of three children having to change diapers at home. Like, you know, I'm here, whatever.
Uninterested.
Yeah. Okay. The perfect example.
And for people who don't know Fedor Emelianenko, he's arguably the greatest mixed martial arts fighter of all time, certainly as a heavyweight. And you don't have to look far on the internet to find his highlights and what he did to people.
Yeah.
And yes, he would walk into the ringer cage and look like he would rather be anywhere else in the world.
Yeah. Never angry and never smiling. He did.
No. Nope.
Never angry and never smiling. Let's just poker face like normal.
Yep. I'd love to circle back to bully victims for a moment, especially young bully victims for a moment. We talked a lot about with the bullies, giving them the titles and the responsibilities and the positive attention and reinforcement they need. We talked about the victims, giving them the confidence through jiu-jitsu. I'm curious, when you are in a school environment and you see somebody being bullied and being a victim, how do you talk with them in order to help them through the moment and gain that confidence or that self-respect in a school environment as opposed to in a jiu-jitsu environment?
You mean the victim?
Yes.
How do
yes.
I talk to the kid
who's
a victim? Yeah, well, bullying is not to be, it is better to be prevented than to be, how can I say, healed or deal with. But things happen. So once it happens, I approach the kid and I ask what happened. If I see the situation, I don't have to ask him what happened, but I tell the kid, come with me, see it, and tell me what happened. How do you feel? You know that this kid is like, it depends. There's different situations. If there's one, for example, a bigger kid, like beating the smaller kid, I go to the smaller kid and I say, there's no problem. He's a bigger kid. He's trying to prove his point. He's trying to show off to people. Don't bother. I will deal with the situation, stay calm. And it happens. But now I got you covered. You're with me. You're safe. And let's talk more about that later. But for now, stay calm. Nothing will happen to you. First thing is like, try to calm down the kid because it's a very stressful situation. And well, in different situations, I will deal in different manners. And with the kid that is bullying others, of course, I said before that I try always to search something that they want and give it to them, like their desire to be seen. But when the kid is doing something bad, you cannot be like a mother to them. You gotta say what you're gonna say. So sometimes I really say to the kids, you're not supposed to do that. If this is wrong, I'm angry with you. We're gonna have a really serious conversation because you're doing bad things here. You're not supposed to be doing that. You're bigger than the other kid. This is wrong. And yeah, you have to do something, you know. I like to in school, in the public school I work, I like to more to give prizes to good attitudes than to punish bad attitudes. It's better to do that because if the kids understand that they have something to gain when they behave well, it's more effective than punishing kids, you know. But sometimes you have to punish kids because if they do bad things and nothing happened to them, what are they learning? They're learning that they can do whatever they want. This is not good also. So my way to approach kids is like that. I always go first to the victim. It depends on the situation, and I calm them down. And then I see what to do. It depends on the situation, always.
Certainly. I do love the approach. And two things I hope people picked up on. Number one, asking the victim how he or she feels. So we're allowing them to express that. And then we can begin to hopefully help them through that. And also letting them know that they're safe. Because once they know that they're safe and somebody is caring for them and covering them, then they're more likely to open up. Because there are situations where people are bullies because of something that's missing in their life. And there are situations where people are victims because of something that's missing in their life. And that thing that me missing might be physical size. It might be confidence. It might be, you know, a physical ailment that makes somebody else feel like they can pick on them. Or it might be that they don't have somebody at home in their life who shows them the love or the care or builds that confidence in them. Mm-hmm. So by letting them know that they're safe and we do care how they feel, we can help build them up as well. And I would like to stress from my own experience that although we're talking about children, this is true with adults. One of the more sad investigations I had to work was an investigation where two adult men were bullying another adult man. The two bullies were, these men were in their 40s. The two bullies were much bigger. They were much cooler, much more popular. The victim was much smaller. He was an alcoholic. He admitted it. So he had his own issues that he was working, and he was very easy to make the victim. And because it was so easy, these guys kept picking on him until it went way too far. And eventually we had to step in and make sure that it was taken care of. And the two bullies didn't get to work there anymore because of the things that they had said and done. And just because they're adults doesn't mean the psychological needs aren't still the same. The bullies need to be seen or appreciated. They need to be addressed and corrected, but need to be seen and appreciated. And the victim needs to feel safe and cared for and have their feelings addressed and supported as well.
Yeah, absolutely right. And you see how bullies search for the easy target. Mm-hmm. Nobody bullies Shaquille O'Neal, right?
No.
Nobody's going to bully a big guy. So they look for the easy ones. And in my work, I always track who are the easy ones, who are the possible targets. There was a kid, what I did in a public school to begin the anti-bully program is that I went to the classes and I asked the kids, which rules you guys think that this school should have for us to have a better environment, you know? Write down in a paper, I told them. And then they wrote down in papers all sorts of things like, you can't call my mom names, it's too noisy, we should have a longer break, lots of things. And there was a kid that he was writing and crying a little bit. And I approached him and I said, what's the problem? What do you have to say? Why are you crying? And he said, people can't call us bad smell. It's not bad smell specifically. It's like when your mouth smells bad, well, how do you call that?
Bad breath.
Bad breath. Yeah, thank you. And he was like, you can't call people bad breath. I'm crying. And the other kids were laughing at this. He was the perfect victim because he was a little kid, really shy. What I did with this kid was, okay, it's okay. I like that rule. Write down. Let's do it. And then we set the rules at the school. And later, some months later, we had a drawing contest in the school because I started a point system where if you behave badly, you get a negative points. And if you have enough negative points, you can't participate in the activities. So it's another way to give prizes to good attitudes. So this kid was in the drawing contest and he won in his category. He was a little kid. There were two categories for the olders and for the youngers. And he won. He was very proud of himself. The boy like changed his behavior in school. He started smiling more. He started talking to other people, making friends. It changed his life. And also he started bullying some little kids. And I was paying attention to that because now he was in the other part of the bullying process, right? Now he was confident and he was passing the bullying to others. And of course, I had to talk to him again, but he had an incredible change in his life just because he had a talent. Nobody saw it. When I saw it by chance, because there was a contest for every student and he was very good at drawing, and we saw something good that he has and nobody knew it. As we knew it, we put his drawing on the mural with his photographs. And he received a medal for that. He was so proud of himself. It changes people's lives, you know, when you make a compliment. If you make it, there was an American writer. He wrote a book. In Portuguese, it is how to make friends and influence people. Yes. I don't know. Dale Carnegie. I read his book many years ago. And there is one thing that he says. Always find something truth in a person to make a compliment about. You know, everybody has mm-hmm. everybody has something to teach. Everybody has something that they can do well. So find that and say that to the person. You are good at this. I like that. If you do that, this person will love you. You know, And when they love you, they're going to be open to you. They're going to tell their issues. I use that with kids. I'm always making compliments like, oh, you play well soccer. You're a good kid. Oh, you're honest. There was another story. I'm going to tell you, this is interesting. The kid was playing soccer. Nobody wants to lose, okay? The kid was in the goal. He was the goalkeeper of the team. And his team had a goal scored against him. But nobody was watching. There was no adult watching. There was no referee. There were only like 8 kids playing. And there was one player of his team that said, no, it was not a goal. Because they were playing like in walls. They didn't have a proper goal to play. It's a public school, no budget. And they were playing in the wall. And the limits of the goal are not very clear. But it was a goal. But one kid of the team was like, no, it was not a goal. And the goalkeeper, the kid said to his friend, come on, man, it was a goal. Accept that. Accept the fact that it was a goal. And I saw it. And later at the class, I made sure to talk to all the class in front of everybody. Arthur, I saw what you did in the game. You were honest. You were honest at the game. Nobody was seeing, but you were honest. And the kid was like, man, I'm receiving a compliment. And especially for those kids in public schools, they have a rough life. They have a really tough life, you know. Some of them don't have parents. Some of them have parents in the crime, drug dealers. Some of the parents are drug addicts, like crack and other stuff. And they have a really tough life. Maybe this kid never received a compliment. Maybe it was his first in his life. Who knows? But his face to me was like, is this a compliment? What is this guy doing? What is this guy talking to me? Strange for me. The kid was like shocked. And it was interesting to see that. He was proud of himself. In his face, I could see that he was happy inside. He has a warmth in his heart, like, man, love exists. And I can taste a little bit of that. Now, this is what they miss in their life.
It's so important. My wife has a sticker, a note that she wrote on our refrigerator. We have one son. And it says, you can't make a child do better by making them feel worse.
Yeah, absolutely true. Man, children, kids will behave as you believe they are. Like you said before, if you tell a kid that you are dumb, they will believe in that. So you can't make them feel worse because they're not do well. This is logical to me, you know? There are some parents that they talk about their kids to other people in front of the kids. Like, oh, my son, he always make a mess at home. He's a really nervous kid, something like that. You shouldn't say that in front of a kid because he will listen and he will believe in that. So if my parent is saying that I make a mess at home, what I'm going to do? I'm going to make a mess because that's what I do, you know? But otherwise, if you say to the kid, come on, you're a good kid. This behavior doesn't match the kid you are. You're not a messy kid. Why are you making a mess? This is not you. If you talk to a kid like this, they will receive a different title. They receive the title of not messy kid. So if they are not a messy kid, they will start behaving accordingly, you know, just to match the expectation. This is clear to me. This is, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely clear. And you'd mentioned something earlier about the boy who had been bullied and then became a bully temporarily. Yeah. Unfortunately, like you said, that could be a learned behavior. It's either learned from their parents or somebody in their life. Maybe they watched another kid at school or somebody who was a bully. Eventually, when they're old enough, big enough, and somebody is smaller than them, because it's what happened to them, it can be easy for them to continue that cycle of abuse, if it's the right word to use, and then carry it on to somebody else. So again, what a fantastic job recognizing that and addressing it appropriately, as opposed to so many people saying, well, now he's the bad kid. No, he's not. He's just doing what he was taught to do.
Yeah.
So love the examples. I would like to ask a jiu-jitsu question. Hopefully people are listening to this and somewhere along the line thinking, you know, maybe jiu-jitsu is not for me or my family, but there's other great lessons about anti-bullying and how we should think and be as human beings. But maybe there's some people listening who are thinking, you know what? Maybe jiu-jitsu could really help my child. Or maybe jiu-jitsu could really help myself, my husband, my wife, my brother. It can be, I believe that often the hardest thing to do is walk into a jiu-jitsu academy for the first time and watch what everybody else is doing and think to yourself, oh no, they're going to do that to me and I'm never going to be able to do that, which we all know isn't the case. You stick with it long enough and you're going to be able to do it. Jiu-jitsu is for everybody. There's so many different ways to do it. What would your advice be to somebody who is scared or nervous about themselves or someone they love starting jiu-jitsu?
First thing for parents, your kid is not going to have cauliflower ears. Only if you let them. You know, that's the number one issue for parents. They think the kids will have cauliflower ears. That's the first chapter of my book. And I make it clear that it's a choice. People that have cauliflower ears, it's a choice. You can always drain the blood, you know. It happened to me. And secondly, imagine that people in the gym, they need partners. There's no sense in frightening people, frightening new guys. We need new guys. We need new white belts so the academy keeps on growing, and we need new students. There's no point on pushing people away. So, the first time I entered a jiu-jitsu gym, it was a little bit scary, of course. But everything you don't know is scary. If you ask me, like, would you surf big waves in Nazaré? I would say, no, it's scary. But people do it. Some people do it. And they don't think, like, it's very scary. Otherwise, it wouldn't be there. Of course, people are afraid of some things, but we learn how to deal with the fear. And once you get into a jiu-jitsu gym, you'll be looking at something that you don't know. And it's natural, it's normal that you're going to feel a little bit afraid of that. Oh, there's a guy from the other end of the mat. Oh, they're like choking each other. What is that? It's normal for us that train. So once you get there and you get to know the martial art, you're going to understand the moves, and it's going to be normal for you, and you're not going to be afraid of that anymore. Quite the opposite. You're even going to like it. You know, have you had these moments that you go to the gym, you get beaten from everybody, and then you go back to your home like happy? You know, why is that? Because you're doing something you like. You feel alive doing that. It's like it has so many good things. It's not only learning to defend, learning to deal with bullies. It's like good for your brain too. You know, in my book, I quote an American scientist, Arthur Kremer. He's a researcher. He researches about the brain health. And I wrote an email to him asking if jiu-jitsu was, in his opinion, a good activity. He said, yes, it is, because it has at least the three most important things for the brain health. Aerobic exercise, which is number one. New learning. Mm-hmm. We learn new things every day in jiu-jitsu, right?
Yes,
and we learn it like, we learn it upside down. We learn it inverted. Mm-hmm. So many variations. And the third thing is like social interaction. This is very important. And in jiu-jitsu, we not only have a family at the gym, we have friends at the gym, but we have a close relationship because we choke each other. We hug each other. It's not like playing ping pong, you know? We're hugging each other. And we get to know the way people we get to know how people really are, because if you are a brave person, it's going to show up in the mats. If you're a coward, it's going to show up in the mats. Once you step in the mat, the good and the bad things about you will all be like shown to everybody. If you refuse to tap, if you're a proud person, people will know it. So with time, you get to know the most intimate things about your partners in the gym. So it's good for lots of things. What I would say to somebody that is thinking about engaging in a jiu-jitsu gym, it will be the best thing you do to your life, you know? But be sure to work out at the gym so you don't get injured very often.
Yes, yeah. The whole body health is very important, as I have been taught more than once. But I agree, and I would add that in good jiu-jitsu academies, the people there want to make you better. The yeah. people there want you to come back. The people there yeah. want to help you work around whatever your injuries are, whatever your limitations are, whatever your yeah. fears are. They want to do that. And in the good gyms, the professors like yourself, they're trying to develop the whole human being. They're not trying to develop black belts. They're not trying to develop fighters. They're trying to develop the whole human being because they yeah. understand the self-confidence, the level of calm, the brain development and growth, the sense of community, all of these things that are developed through the art. So while it can be scarier to start, it could be foreign to start. And we all start at the bottom of the food chain and have to work our way up. But the respect that we earn along the way and the fact that in the good gyms, everybody is there to help everybody. It's certainly, I'm not to the level of expertise and experience that you are. I don't want people to think that, but it is so worth the time and the investment for all of the things that we've talked about today and so much more, just because we don't have the extra time to keep talking about it. Yeah. But it's well, well worth it. So thank you so much for everything that you're doing, for everyone that comes through your jiu-jitsu academy and also at the school you work at, and especially for the kids. Is the kids in a public school that have so many things working against them, if they have one person, show them love, show them gratitude, show them that they're seen, that they're appreciated, that can make all their difference in their lives. And you're out there doing that every day, whether it's through teaching at school, teaching music, teaching jiu-jitsu. So thank you so very much for doing that. Is your book available here in the United States? Can we order
yeah.
it here?
It's not available in the United States, but people can buy it at my website and I can send it to the United States. I've done that before. It takes a little long, takes like a month, but it's available. Yes, the English version, the physical book and the ebook, it's like if you buy it and you receive an email, right? Yeah. It's automatical. But Michael, thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me. And it's been a pleasure to talk about this. You gave me the opportunity to express myself about something that I love, which is not only jiu-jitsu, but the humanity, human beings. I love everything that is about human beings, human mind. And it's been a very good opportunity. Thank you for inviting me. And thank you for having this great show. You're a very good interview. Of course, this is your job, right? You're an expert in that. And I will correct you in something. Don't assume that as I am a black belt, I have more experience in something than other people. There's no such a thing. It's not because it's not being a black belt is not like I know it all. Not at all. I'm a learner. I'm a student still. And you know lots of things that I don't know, you know, even in jiu-jitsu. I believe in that. I truly believe in that. I can learn from a white belt. I can learn from a purple belt. Even jiu-jitsu positions. Yes, I can. And this is the mindset I teach to my students. There is every person in the world has something to teach you. And you can teach something to everybody in the world. That's what I believe.
I'm writing that down. That is going to be the title of this episode, by the way. Everyone in the world wow. has something to teach you. I love that. I appreciate your humility. And really what you're doing is you're living what you teach by your approach yeah. and by your humility and looking to learn from everybody that you interact with. Thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate it. I'm thrilled that there's a way to get your passion and your experience out to more people. So I'm so grateful that you had this conversation, and I hope that we can do it again sometime. And maybe, just maybe, one of these days I'll sneak in Sean's suitcase. I'll come down to Brazil and we can meet each other.
Oh, it will be a pleasure. If you guys come down to Brazil, you have a home here, okay? I'll take you to all the gyms I know. We're going to have a fun time here. Thank you again.
I would appreciate it. That would be fantastic.
Right. Thank you, man. It's been a pleasure.
Stay safe. Os.
You too. Os.
Pedro, thank you so much for such a great conversation. We appreciate you joining us all the way from Rio and sharing all of your experiences from running your academy, from what you've personally learned, grown, and developed through jiu-jitsu, from the key lessons from your book, and of course, such great examples that you have working with kids in schools to teach them how to see each other differently, how to communicate with each other, how to develop that inner sense of self-confidence, how both bullies and bully victims need to be seen and to feel respected for us to solve this problem together. Solving the bullying problem is not something that we're going to do just by saying nice words and hoping for it. Getting involved like you are and giving people solutions at both ends of the problem is so very important. Thank you for all you do, and thank you for taking the time to share it with us today. Of course, thank you all for taking the time to be here with us. And thank you to our sponsors on the way out, Humantel. Please head over to humantel.com. Enter the code INCOISIV25 for 25% off best-in-class online self-paced training to learn how to accurately identify what somebody is thinking and feeling in real time by identifying their changing emotions through facial expressions and nonverbal communication. That's over at humantel.com. Certifiedinterviewer.com for all the professional interviewers. That's where you can learn more about the International Association of Interviewers, what it takes to join the organization, the benefits at the individual and organizational level, online content, in-person events, and so much more. That's also where you'll find out what it takes to qualify for the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation and what that can mean for your career as well. CertifiedInterviewer.com. And Inquasive. At Inquasive.com is where you will learn more about the educational engagements we are asked to custom develop for our clients to help teach leaders at all levels of the organization how to encourage people to share sensitive information under vulnerable circumstances in the face of consequences by saving face and aligning their self-image with participating openly in these critical conversations. So much to be found over there at Inquasive.com. Thank you. Thank you all so very much for continuing to join us. Please take a few seconds, subscribe to the show, like the show, share the show, let your friends know about it. Give us feedback. What are you learning? What do you like? What would you like to hear more or less of? Who would you like to have on the show? We'd love to hear it. Thank you for continuing to come back. Please stay safe, take care of each other, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.